Good morning. I'm Alan Jansen. I'm with CDC in Atlanta with National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. I'd like to welcome you to the conference today. I also wanted to kind of do a little bit of extension. We've done some work with similar to what Jillian has done, but we've done a little bit further. Before we start framing our remarks, I just was curious about our audience. How many people in here are communication specialists? Would you put your hands up? People are directly involved in framing the medium message? Okay. How many people are in public health nursing, direct health care? Okay. We're going to try and make this very applicable to you as we get into doing this and give you some ideas in terms of what's out there. I think one of the things is, as I've talked to a lot of public health nurses, there's been this concern that we get all these questions, we don't know where they're coming from, what's going on here. So hopefully we can answer some of those questions today, and then I think we'll have a little bit of time left afterwards that perhaps we can talk about specific questions that we might be able to answer. I'd also like to introduce Kelly Martin, who's with me today. Kelly has worked with us on this project and did a great deal of work, and she'll be co-presenting with me today as we get into do this. What I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit. This is a program we did, a study we did for the vaccine safety group at HHS. We had a meeting. We went through and we looked at a sample. We drew a sample of 1,087 articles and blogs on immunization and vaccine issues. We did this from a time period from May 1st to August 31st, and from that sample of 1 million, we basically selected 10,000 articles that we would do in terms of doing analysis on that. Our vaccine topics, we did a variety of searches that we did in this. Obviously, we did this in an automated way, and we'll be talking about that in just a second. We'll be talking about the select websites that we drew from. Kelly, is there anything you wanted to talk about? Okay. One of the ways that we were able to do 1 million blog sites was that we use a system that some of you in the room probably get our newsletter. We use an automated news system called AutoInform. It's a system in which we actually are using a new technology that was developed for the intelligence community. It's called semantic linguistic analysis. We can actually go out and the machine will actually read and categorize stories for us so that we have a really good idea in terms of what's going on. And when we did this in terms of the content analysis, we looked at, you know, what are the dominant news messages. The machine will actually categorize that and tells us what's being said in the article about that. And then also, we also calculated, and I'll show you how we did that in just a little bit, in terms of frequency and reach analysis for the messages. And we conducted our first attempt in terms of trying to understand reach with blogs called a Metascore, which is an index score. AutoForm is a system that it uses a variety of sources to do this. For us, you'll see in highlighted when it talks about multi-intelligent sources. The one thing I learned about this, I'll be real frank with you, I'm careful what I write anymore. But what it does is that it uses what's called open source intelligence. So if it's out there on the web, we can access it and we can actually read what's there. So we're looking primarily in our studies, we're looking at news articles that are out there, online news articles. We also use the LexisNexis feed, so we also get the newspapers that are, provide us with a print copy in terms of what's there, and also we take a look at the blogs. We run it through a filter, so we select out what we want to have. We use a system, it's natural language processing called semantic linguistic analysis. It was developed at the University of Tennessee. We then, on the basis of that, will extract what we want out, and we'll summarize what our reports are so we can handle large numbers of items into the millions each day. On a daily basis, we'll read 15,000 sources, and from that we'll extract what's out there in terms of the blogs and also in terms of the news. Kelly, anything at this point?
The AutoInform itself stands for Auto Immunization News for Managers, and it is a media monitoring system that can code over 200 times a human coder. So it basically is there to eliminate the tedious reading and analysis that a human coder would take days and days upon days to do, and it can be eliminated and narrowed down for you.
And you can see right now what we do basically is that this gives you kind of an idea in terms of what we do. The news and blogs come in. They come in from a variety of sources right here, web, email, search, anything that we don't, by the way, the emails there is the potential we don't read that. So we're basically looking at web and RSS. We have a number of subscriptions that we use in terms of databases in terms of doing that. In our natural processing or semantic linguistic analysis, we take a look at, you know, what's out there in terms of locations, entities, relationships between the data. We feed it through a database. It comes out, gives us a report, basically talks about trends. We're able to map where news stories are. We basically map this year where influenza was reported as being outbreaks in the news based on what we were able to search. We also take a look at, you know, what's reported in terms of disease outbreaks. One of the other things, too, that we try and do with this is that one of the things that happens with blogs is that we've all looked at the blogs, and we see a fantastic number of blogs that are out there that are kind of anti-vaccine. I think we're all kind of focused on that. One of the things that happens is that there's a lot of blogs out there, but the question that's always been in our mind is that how many people really read those things? How many people actually see them? That's a really interesting question. So what we try to do is that, and measuring impressions on the web is kind of a touchy area in terms of how to do that. There's a number of sources that are out there. We selected to use a database that's put out by Amazon.com. It's called Alexa. And what it does is that it takes a look at 1 million websites or 1 million web visits. If we were to take a look at a sample of that, how many times would somebody go to the specific site that was there in terms of the analysis, and how many people would actually visit that site? So on the basis of that, we're able to use this and calculate what's called an index score with a Metascore. It also allows us to take this data, and what we're trying to do with it is compare impressions, which is that with in standard media jargon, impressions is generally the largest potential, the people that can actually see a newspaper. So we're able to take a look at that in terms of what's the reach for that particular newspaper, and then compare that with what is our particular reach in terms of our blog sites. Okay. One of the things we did was we ran through and we were ramping up in May, and this is our time period, May through August. And you can see that we took a look at over 1 million articles, and you can see as time came on, we were able to get more and more folks as we brought these folks in. I think the most important takeaway message on this slide is that if you take a look down at the little blue blocks that are there, that's the number of news articles, online news articles that were about vaccine safety and vaccine issues. And then the little kind of red ones down there were the blogs that were about that. So there's a lot of stuff that's out there on vaccines, a lot of news sources. Not all of it is on vaccine safety issues. Not all of it's negative stuff. So one of the things that this gave us a clue was that what you're really looking at is that you have a very small amount of this stuff that's out there during any time period. Well, how does it seem to be having the biggest impact on us, as it seems to do, because we all get these questions about vaccine safety. One of the interesting things is if you think back to when are they concerned about vaccine safety, it's the time that they're getting the shots for their children. And we have a lot of folks that go online. One of the things we've noticed is that we have Gen Y and post-Gen Y folks that are out there now that are becoming, raising children more and more. They tend to use the internet and the web as their primary source of information. They tend not to read newspapers. So we're beginning to see that, they'll go out and they'll search, primarily using WebMD. There are other search engines that they'll use. They may go to the mothering sites that are out there that provide mothering advice. And what do they see? In some cases, they see some of these negative articles. First couple of them, you don't know what to think, but then you begin seeing it over and over and over again. What happens with these folks? They begin asking a lot of questions in terms of what's out there. It's been interesting as we've done focus groups around the country. One of the things that happens is that it depends on your educational level. We've noticed in terms of the folks that are out there. I had an interesting conversation with some folks this morning earlier before we started this conversation. One of the things we've noticed is that people seem to have like layering or kind of indexing their what they want to see in terms of information about vaccine safety. The folks that have had high college education, and a lot of them have had it beyond, they really asked, they want to see the research data. We've done a number of focus groups. We were in Washington, close to Redmond, Washington, which is the home of Microsoft. We were in Austin, Texas, which is the home of Dell. And what did the parents there say they wanted to see? They actually wanted to see the research. So one of the things I think, when you get a lot of the vaccine safety questions, it may behoove you to have a pile of the research available or have resources there that are available and direct them to some of the websites. So, as we can see is that there's a lot of stuff that's out there in terms of the news that's about vaccines. There's a small amount that's out there about vaccine safety, and it seems to be impacting, at a certain time in terms of when do folks are looking for this information.
Kelly, anything?
Just to add, as far as the spikes and things that come around developing with news articles, for example, the measles and mumps outbreaks against the college students that had one vaccination. So, of course, the blogs are growing up with negative information saying what good are vaccinations if they're still getting the disease. So the trends and the spikes of the information also correlated with some of the negative news press. So the blog information was more impressionable during those times.
Yeah, one of the things I think this is probably a good place to talk about this. One of the things is that what we have to understand is a lot of our communications is interrelated. When there was the vaccine safety court decision was made in terms of not making the awards to the parents in terms of their litigation against the Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund. The first story came out was on the wire, press wires, news wires, and immediately went into the blog sites. The blog sites were there. They provided a lot of information along with them. And that blog sites basically pulled the stories. I mean, pardon me, I jumped one step too fast. Right to the internet websites, then right to the blog sites. And then from the blog sites, they actually drove all the Twitter conversation that was going on about it. So it was really kind of fascinating. So what happens is that a lot of your communications is really very interlinked. So it's really kind of fascinating. And much in the same way that, you know, we heard this morning in the plenary session talking about opportune moments to do communications, you'll also see a lot of stuff that's out there in terms of folks that will take the opportunity to provide a negative side to vaccination. It's an opportune moment for them also.
Good, Kelly.
One of the things we did is we went through and we took the 10,000 articles. We went through and we looked at, was it, you know, what were they saying basically in the articles? And we basically came through and we had 10 categories. And Kelly, why don't you go ahead and tell them how you did that?
Through the analysis of the 10,000 articles, 52 dominant media messages were developed, and this how we came up with the top 10. Some, for example, were vaccine and autism was cited a lot about in both news and blog medias. Vaccines are safe, and parents avoiding vaccinations are some of the dominant media messages that were developed. And so after the information was analyzed or brought through AutoInform, these media messages were determined, and just going through and analyzing what parents, physicians, and public health practitioners were saying about vaccine safety issues, their concerns, their questions, and things like that were compiled, and the information was sorted out, and the meta scores were developed first for both news and blogs, and this is how this graph is determined.
What I wanted to do is show you the graph, and graph four, to take a look at it is that the key thing is take a look at where the news stories are or where the dominant messages are. And I think one of the things you're going to see is in the blogs, predominantly you then begin seeing more negative blog comments that are out there than what's in there in terms of the news. One of the responses I've heard a lot has been is that, well, we just need to increase our news coverage. We need to have more news stories about what's going on with vaccine safety because this is really going to improve things. I think what you're seeing is that most of the negative stuff where we really have to make the fight, the good fight really, I think, is that in the area of blogs. You can see in blogs is that avoiding vaccination, you know, which is message number three, was a huge drive in terms of what was there. Parents avoiding vaccination. I mean, if you're a parent thinking about getting your child vaccinated, what are you doing? You're getting messages of reinforcing them. It's okay not to give them the vaccines. And one of the other things that's been fascinating is that, you know, we're looking at as the web as kind of a phenomenon. It's a social networking thing. So what you see is that a lot of times parents want to get comments of parents more than what they want health professionals. That comes up a lot in terms of what we've done with focus groups. So you can see that, you know, these social comments really do make a difference. Mm-hmm.
It includes everything. It was every. It was basically a group of. It was quotes and information and statements that parents were saying, individual about adults and also parents not vaccinating their kids. So it's a combination of both.
So what you're saying is that they're getting reinforced for having the belief of not getting the vaccines on the blogs. And so, you know, that's one of the areas I think that, you know, hopefully we're going to talk about this in the conclusion, but that's one of the areas in which we really do have to increase our efforts in terms of putting those more vaccine-prone or vaccine, friendly comments that would be out there talking about that vaccine positive. One of the other things I wanted to do was give you an idea in terms of just how well is this done. And we use the whole idea of the Metascore to give us an idea in terms of reach, in terms of a number of articles that are out there and actually how many people actually saw that. Now with traditional scattergrams, you start at the XY axis and you go this way. What I want to do with this is I want you to start in this corner and come right on down the bottom. And the higher you are in terms of the scale right here is the more reach, the more people that actually saw what the messages were. You can see that, you know, measles refused vaccination. And this was the San Diego situation that occurred. And so that was a short-term time period. You saw a lot of folks about parents refusing vaccination against measles. Then you move into like blog message two, parents avoid vaccination. These are messages that are consistently out there in a time period over and over again. So what we begin seeing is that more of our positive messages in terms of what's to hear in the news aren't seen as much in terms of, you know, of getting through as much, but the blogs, which are the primary source of communication for kind of the Gen Y or the post-Gen Y, are really, you know, predominantly negative comments, or at least they were during the study period. The other thing, as I'd show you, is right down here about the XY cluster. You know, one of the things is that we see all these blogs are out there. The question is, you know, how many people really see them? There's several blogs that, and several messages that are there, that a lot of people really don't see them. I mean, you're talking about maybe 150 hits for some of these blog sites, so they're really not there. But what happens is, cumulatively over a period of time, when they all carry the negative blog messages, I think it really does make an impact.
Kelly, anything else?
So I think one of the things, you know, in terms of talking about kind of what we've seen is that, you know, we've seen a higher frequency of vaccine safety concerns in the blogs and news stories during the time period. So where do we in public health really need to start thinking about putting our effort? It has to be in the area of the blogs. Vaccine story issues represent about 1% of the immunization stories during that time period. There's not a lot of them, but when they what they are out there is that they seem to be having a great deal of impact. The blogs are primarily used more for anti-vaccine messages. Positive news stories appear to be more in the news. And then several of the negative blog messages seem to have a little bit greater reach in terms of what we saw with our kind of initial look in terms of what's out there.
Kelly, anything else?
Good. So pretty much that's what we saw in terms of the blogs. I've got a couple minutes here for questions.
Or Edgar, do you want
to? Okay. Any questions? Uh-huh. Well, I tell you, one of the things that we've noticed is that a couple of things we saw as we looked at this, and I didn't put this in the slide, is that if an event occurs, you know, anywhere in vaccine safety, it never goes away. I think 10 years ago we had a meeting at Simpson Wood to talk about vaccine safety issues, and every so often somebody brings that up as an entirely new issue. You know, this clandestine meeting we had at Simpson Wood, all you got to do is follow the DOT signs out to it. Anyway, so you know you're looking at that. So I think the thing that really has to happen is that if you're not thinking about writing a blog, or you have like a web presence, I would encourage you to start talking about some of the issues in vaccine safety in the blogs, and doing that just from a local standpoint. Because I think, you know, you're a known entity in your community, and start communicating this way through folks, you know, putting it out there, and just having the stuff. I think what we have to have is consistently a better presence out there in the blogosphere of positive messages about vaccination.
Mm-hmm. I'm a pre-time course. I read political blogs, and I've seen some positive vaccine stories. And one person who I found out was a doctor from Medicare or something.
But, oh, Oric? Yeah.
I've seen a lot of positive vaccine. Then when I read through the comments, there's some negative, they usually get shut down.
Yeah. I think one of the things is that we have to take a look at is that keep in mind it's like. What we've seen is this is a very small number of folks that are out there, a number of stories that are out there about vaccine safety, but we always have to maintain a real positive presence and put our messages out there at the same time. And I think one of the things that's been great is that we have had a number of bloggers. I think Oric is one of them. There is another one, looks like a former epidemiologist, Epi Wonk, has done some really positive things in terms of what's out there, talking about what the issues are. The problem is that, you know, they put it out there, and what I've noticed with David Kirby's work and some of the other folks that talk about vaccine safety concerns is David will put it out there, and he's kind of the shepherd, and then you see all these little sheep coming along talking about what he said, you know, reinforcing the messages. I think one of the things we need to do is that we might need to do whatever we can to generate more interest in terms of what's out there. So if Epi Wonk talks about this, talk about it in your blog or whatever you do in terms of encouraging folks to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think one of the things is that we've relied pretty heavily on other people to speak for us, and you know we're in a situation now where individual comments count. I mean, you know, you can take a look at this entire movement in terms of the web and blogs. I mean, we used to have mass communication models, and now we're moving down to kind of personal communications models. And so I think, you know, whatever we do to remind people and reinforce positive impressions about vaccines, I think it's going to be very helpful. I think the other thing is that I would encourage folks that. There seems to be the issue de jure that comes up with vaccines, and one of the issues, and I'm hoping that one of the things that's going to happen is that during with some of the stimulus money that we may get with vaccines is we'll get some folks that will actually take a look at what's going on out there in the blog world and actually make comments about, you know, what are ways that, the public health professionals can address what the issues are and talk about what the other side of the issue is. Because a lot of this stuff, I mean, it's just, it changes every day. Next question. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there has been a number of, Secretary Leavitt was one that had his own blog and did a lot of that stuff on pandemic flu. One of the things I would happen is, and one of the issues we're facing is we're in a time of when people question when it's a blog from a healthcare leader, in that, you know, they want to know what their mothers or what their peer group is thinking. So, you know, I would encourage the value of even peer blogs seems to make a lot of sense in terms of encouraging those people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. Can you come to the microphone? I think that might help. I apologize.
Have you done some kind of citation analysis to find out within a blog or group of blogs whom they are citing, a newspaper, a CDC source, health department, and then relate to how many people are really relating to that?
Yeah, one of the things I have not done a formal study, but I can tell you informally, Dan Olmstead and David Kirby are cited quite a bit in terms of when they talk about things. So there are certain key people that are quoted a lot in terms of this area. You will also see the National Vaccine Information Center when people are questioning about vaccines. Barbara Lowe Fisher will be quoted in a lot of this also. So, you know, there are certain key people that are out there. Yet one of the other issues is that we really don't have any key people that really talk about, you know, what's the other side of this in terms of the vaccine issue. So perhaps we need to start creating some identities too in terms of the of public health, in terms of the blogs, because that's one of the things I think we saw is missing in this.
Hmm? Are there any legal issues before to consider before jumping into the blogosphere?
I'm sure there are, and I think this is, you know, this is the Wild West, no pun intended for being in Dallas. You know, there is one of the things you have to do is that I think you have to constantly be aware of that in terms of what's there. I would think that as time goes on, some of this will become more defined in terms of what's free speech and what's not, and how does all this fit together. But right now, it's kind of wide open. I would just encourage you know, you to be very cautious and have a reason in terms of what you say in terms of doing it. And of course, you know, you'll see the other response to that is all the science is cooked and all the rest of this stuff. And so it's been really interesting since the vaccine court decisions occurred. You know, it's kind of the message has shifted now to where all the science is controlled by the drug companies. So, you know, you begin seeing those kinds of messages back as a response. So I think what happens is you have a very interesting dynamic in terms of what's going on, and you just have to be able to respond to that. And I think what we're looking now is that developing the tools that allow us to respond well in terms of doing that. Any questions?
Sure, we're going to go ahead and open up to other Q&A. We have a few more minutes here. We can have any questions for any of our panelists. Yes.
I think that's one piece of it. That's one piece. Where if we had that effectively, where they could do that. One of the biggest problems, and I really feel a great deal of understanding for the primary care physicians when they're facing a vaccine-resistant patient, because most physicians are in group practices today, and you have so many patients scheduled for you, and you have so much time that you can talk with them in terms of doing that. So they don't have a whole lot of time available to do this. Now, some of the really kind of unique things we've seen is that a lot of physicians will have blogs, and they'll basically bring the issue up on their own blog or on their own website in terms of this and try and redirect it. But the other side of that, too, is that you're beginning to see a lot of folks where And it's kind of emerged over the last number of years, a distrust of government, a distrust of institution, a distrust of healthcare. And I want to know in my social network what my fellow moms in my, you know, kind of virtual extended play group are thinking, you know, because that's going to help me shape my mind in terms of what the physicians are, you know, what the physician tells me, whether I can trust him or whether I can't. I mean, you know, one of the most interesting things we have now is that we now have Craigslist for physicians, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, did he give you good answers? Is this a good physician? You can choose him off Craigslist now. So I think we're all, the whole dynamic of healthcare is changing a little bit in terms of this. And I think the other thing is that we need to take a look at, you know, what's the social framing, what's the social network that we need to be putting our positive messages in also.
Other questions? Yes. Can you speak up? Can you come up to the microphone? I'm sorry.
You mentioned a mechanism on Amazon.com to track impressions. What was that called?
Oh, it's called Alexa.
Alexa?
Alexa, yeah.
A-L-E-S-A?
Yeah, Alex with an A. And what it does is that it's one of the sources that are out there that measure the number of visits to blog sites. A lot of the folks that have the commercial blog sites don't like it because it's quite a bit lower than what the Google visits, the scores are. What we try to do with that is that we chose one source for that and be consistent across that. That would allow us to compare different blog sites among different blog sites. So, you know, this is a new area and our tools are evolving in terms of measuring what's out there. I think the other thing that's interesting for us is that, you know, we have to take a look at a lot of stuff every day just to see what's out there, because we've now moved away from mass communication to more personal communication.
Okay. Actually, I have a question. I think that, you know, public health, you know, is only recently, you know, getting into online media and new media to really communicate health these days. You know, my work, my organization just recently gave us access to YouTube and MySpace and, you know, let alone blogs. So access is an issue. Another issue is also people's comfort level. You know, not everyone is comfortable going on blogs or going on social networking sites or can even justify that. So how would you suggest as a health advocate, you know, how do we begin? How do we join that conversation online?
I think one of the things that we do is that if we look at communications, it's just not newspapers, it's just not television, it's just not that anymore. I think we have to start introducing the concept that we really do need to have the kind of the blog presence that we need to have, that we're really dealing, especially in the vaccines, with a very narrow band or a very narrow audience or audience segment of folks that, you know, are currently having children or getting those children vaccinated. And we need to use those tools that are going to reach them in the most effective way. And unfortunately, it's no longer newspapers. Yeah, one of the things we have to do is when you do that, I think you have to be careful because some of your bloggers can be exposed as being, you know, on your side, not just neutral. So I think one of the things that we've done is we've done some things for a series of briefings. We did this for influenza with bloggers and talking about the importance of getting flu shots for children. And we got several positive blogs. But one of the things we've noticed is that it's kind of a point in time. It's almost a flash in the pan. You do the blogosphere, it's the topic du jour, and then it goes away and something else comes up the next day. So we need, you know, to think about how do we do a sustained effort in terms of doing this. Question?
Well, a sort of a question and a comment to Edgar. I completely agree that we need to really take control of the blogs and bring the information out there. And I think what's happening, I'm sorry, I'm Amy with Every Child by Two. What we've noticed is happening, and it seems so unfair, but the misinformation just comes out. It just spews out. And someone was talking about whether there's legal ramifications. What we've noticed is that there are seem to be legal ramifications when we speak out and people want to then sue us for libel, but they can say whatever they want and there's no basis in fact and there's no science behind it. And I think it would be really helpful if folks would just, Rich and I were talking about it, we already sent out a daily news clip that many of you all receive, and I think what we'll do is add maybe one big blog of the day and people can go on to it if they wanted to comment, simply just to put the scientific information out there. I think if we all work together to say, all right, Mom, I know you're smart enough to read the science. Here is what you need to read. Don't listen to David Kirby or J.B. Hanley. This is what you should be listening to. And I think if we really start working together, we can get that information out there. And then just one other little thing. We also host some blogger calls, and we've had some really good success with that. Some of the bigger mommy urban moms and folks. And Paul Offit did a great blogger call for us. And also Dr. Ari Brown, who wrote the Baby 411. She's here from Texas. She did a really good blogger call for us. So I think they are really interested in the issue du jour. But it's true. It's sort of like a hit or miss. And we have seen some positive things, though. And if we just keep working on it, I think as a team, we could definitely get the right information out there.
One of the things I think that happens is that, and you brought up a very good point, is that this changes daily. And we're not prepared to respond as quickly as what's going on in the blogosphere in terms of what's changing in terms of the communications messages. And we need to get to be that way. And I think you and I need to talk afterwards about helping you pick up a number of blog sites that are out there and making it available. But I think part of what it is that we've relied heavily on traditional media. I think we're now looking at the changing in terms of what's going on. We do need to have a presence in this kind of new media forum.
And we have time for about one more question.
I have one last statement, and forgive me for doing this, but I have worked with and been in public health now, my gosh, for over 30 years. I hate to say that. But I have the pleasure of a great time, a number of times working with some people that really do an outstanding job. One of the things I think is that we had an individual at CDC that helped us a great deal with the media. And Curtis, if you'd stand up, I think you need to be recognized. Yes, you do. And wanted to thank you for the years that you were there. I mean, Curtis really has been a tremendous advocate for vaccines and vaccine safety, and you're going to be missed.